You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by the International Association of Machinists, Local 778, and the Missouri AFL-CIO. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers of Local Lodge 778 in Kansas City, Missouri, represents thousands of working class people in and around the metro. Our members work in a variety of industries, including automotive, manufacturing, freight, and logistics, and public works. We proudly support the Heartland Labor Forum as it continues to educate our friends and neighbors about the issues affecting Missouri's working class families. And the Missouri AFL-CIO has a short message. It is, they're building unions across Missouri. The Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. Tonight on the show, we have a conversation with UAW workers coming up to the Big Three negotiations. And if you don't know what the Big Three is, it's Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors. And their contract with those companies is up in September. Will this contract bring no more tears? In the news, unions say no to son of Scalia for labor secretary. And MU grad students win big victory in their long struggle to unionize. Our feature at the end of the show is Safety First with Mary Aereo. And now for the news.
And this is the news from our side on August 1st, 2019. At today's labor media lunch, several unions had bargaining and organizing news. The USW Local 12561 said they and plumbers and pipe fitters Local 781 are in tough negotiations with Spire Gas, which sells natural gas to Western Missouri and the St. Louis area. They used to be MGE. The company wants to cut health care benefits for recent and future retirees. The cuts would mean a 60% increase in their cost of health care. The unions are protesting as Spire Gas is not in any kind of financial distress that would warrant cutting its employee standard of living. The City of Blue Springs 9/11 dispatchers are now proud members of Communication Workers of America Local 6360, but the union is still wrangling with the City of Lee's Summit, which is trying to carve three dispatchers out of the bargaining unit the union is trying to organize. Not only are these three not bosses, but also they are strong union supporters. The city's justification is a provision of the super anti-union HB 1413, which was so questionable constitutionally that the courts ordered employers not to enforce it while the law is adjudicated by the courts. Meanwhile, the Missouri Supreme Court will hear CWA's challenge to the law, which seriously weakens the rights of Missouri's public employees, in October. The sheet metal workers just signed a three-year contract with construction contractors, giving them significant raises for apprentices, and good ones, too, for their journeymen.
PAI reports that the AFL-CIO was formally opposing Trump's nomination of Eugene Scalia, the right-wing business lawyer and son of the late conservative Supreme Court Justice, to be Secretary of Labor. Trump nominated Scalia to the job in late July after prior Labor Secretary Alex Acosta was forced to resign over revelations about the sweetheart deal he reached with serial sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein just over a decade ago when he was a U.S. attorney. Scalia served briefly in the George W. Bush administration as Solicitor of Labor, the department's top legal job. But he was so controversial even then that the Senate Labor Committee never called his permanent nomination up for a vote. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka reacted to Scalia's appointment, saying, "Eugene Scalia has spent his entire career making life more difficult and dangerous for working people. We opposed him in 2002 for Solicitor of Labor based on his anti-worker record, and his disdain for working people has worsened, not improved." Trumka said that Scalia has fought ergonomic standards, threatened to destroy workers' retirement savings, challenged the expansion of health care, and dismissed repetitive injuries as junk science. He continued, "The Secretary of Labor needs to be a true advocate for working people. The Labor Department's work is essential to protecting working people and should be subject to less influence from corporate lobbyists, not more." Since his DOL stint, Scalia has been a management side labor lawyer, and records show the prime business mover behind the GOP's successful effort to kill the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's ergonomics rule. He also successfully represented Walmart and got a Maryland law requiring the company to spend at least 8% of payroll on employee health insurance. And he represented SeaWorld in a case in which a killer whale killed its trainer. And there's going to be more on this case in this month's edition of Safety First at the end of the show.
Medicaid expansion advocates are eyeing 2020 wins in red states by taking the issue straight to voters, a strategy that yielded success last year in other Republican-led states. Proponents are petitioning Florida, Missouri, and Oklahoma to include ballot measures, asking residents if they want to broaden out the federal health care program to cover more low-income adults, many of whom are uninsured. Advocates in Missouri have also started collecting signatures for their petition to expand Medicaid to adults under 65 making less than $17,000 per year. A win there could make as many as 219,000 people eligible for Medicaid, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. "We're excited about the potential for Medicaid expansion to deliver health care for hundreds of thousands of hardworking Missourians," said Crystal Brigman Mahaney, Communications Director for Missouri Jobs with Justice, the group leading the effort at the state level. On August 15th, the Heartland Labor Forum will focus on the Missouri Medicaid Expansion Initiative campaign.
And KMIZ in Jefferson City reports that the Missouri Western District Court of Appeals found Tuesday that University of Missouri graduate assistants are workers and have the right to organize a union. Duh. For 3 years, MU has blocked the grad student organizing drive by refusing to schedule a representation election, even though the Coalition of Graduate Workers filed the requisite signatures to trigger an election. However, part of the case got sent back to a Boone County court because the law is not clear on how a union can get selected to represent grad student workers. The problem arises because although the Missouri Constitution gives all workers the right to organize, the Missouri Public Employee Law excludes teachers and the Highway Patrol. Additionally, some of the members of the union are not teachers, they're researchers. Of course, MU had its own interpretation of the decision. A university spokesman said the ruling, in part, backs up MU's argument that the coalition was not a proper representative of graduate assistants. Christian Basie said, "Saying that, we will continue to work to provide an environment that supports graduate students appropriately and encourages a lifetime of learning and discovery." He didn't say they'd recognize the union, even though in an election in April 2016, over 3 years ago, 85% of voters among the 30% of the school's 2,600 graduate assistants who voted said they wanted the coalition as their exclusive collective bargaining representative. In its ruling, the appeals court said graduate assistants are paid, taxed, and provided benefits in the same way that employees are and are assigned work duties and required to report to supervisors in the same way other employees are. The chief judge wrote, "The Missouri Constitution does not exclude employees who also happen to be students." That's the news from our side. The news tonight was read by Tino Scalisi, Jen Zaman, Matt Callahan, and I'm Judy Ansel.
No more tears? It's the big question on everyone's mind tonight, especially those of you working in an auto factory, like our three guests, as the September 14th strike deadline looms closer and closer. In a shroud of secrecy, reminiscent of how the Roman Catholic Church selects her next pope, top officials of the United Auto Workers Union and the Big Three are working out the final details of their 2015 agreement. And many of us are left to wonder and speculate on just what kind of company we're going to be working for on September 15th. Will there be a strike? How long? What is the target company? Will the concessions of 2007, 2009, and 2011, including the infamous two-tier wage and benefit scheme, be stricken from the 2015 agreement? To discuss these topics, we are pleased to be joined in the studio by Matt Slayton, Matt Callahan, and Renita Masoner, all workers of Ford Motor Company's Kansas City Assembly Plant in Clay Como, and all members of United Auto Workers Local 249. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First, let's everybody introduce yourselves. We're going to start over on this side of the table. Nobody can see that, but I'm pointing directly across from me. So, Matt.
My name is Matt Callahan. I've been a UAW Ford worker for 18 years, third generation. I'm a member of the Education Committee. I've been elected alternate committeeman. I've been to three different facilities, starting in St. Louis with Local 325, and then I moved to Michigan when they shut St. Louis down and worked at Flat Rock, Local 3000, and now I am with Local 249 here in Kansas City.
You are a traveling gypsy.
I'm done.
Where do you work? Right now in the plant, where do you work?
Right now, I've been over to stamping last January, and I'm on the number one shift, midnights over there on the press, stamped out metal, put in a box.
Great. So. All right. So that was Matt Callahan, everybody. You'll recognize his voice. Next one up is Matt Slayton.
Yeah, I'm Matthew Slayton. I've been there for 2 years, a year and a half on the line in truck chassis, and now I'm driving a forklift and body shop.
You drive a forklift and body shop?
I'm out there forking around.
One of these days, I'm going to get to be a big boy and drive a forklift and body shop when I get to grow up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been there for 2 years.
Yeah.
So you're also what they call a second-tier worker at Ford Motor Company.
Yeah, I'm on the half-check system.
The half-check system. So you're going to be doing, sometime soon, you're going to be doing the half-workload system. Is that right?
Oh, no.
Because you're getting half pay, you get to do the
same
half
work and half the check.
I see.
Here's a high-low.
Well, that's right. Okay. And then the third person we have up is Renita Masoner. Renita?
Hi, I'm Renita Masoner, and I have been with Ford since January of 2015.
Mm-hmm. So you are also a second-tier worker?
Yes.
So how do you like working at Ford? Is it everything that you hoped that it would be when you...
It's a lot of work. It gets very hot in there. I actually like it, but...
I think you're the exception to the rule. I think everybody else hates it, but Renita Masoner, she likes it. So let's take these things one at a time. The theme of our show is no more tiers. So that's really what we're talking about. I think the thing that's on everybody's mind is the second tier system at Ford Motor Company, and what that means for those of you who don't know. I think it was the 2011 agreement where we made permanent the two-tier wage system, which means that a newly hired worker at Ford Motor Company or at the Big Three will come in at half the wages. So the UAW has stated publicly that it's making progress in talks with the Big Three, but it refuses to release any details. Do any of you have any idea what we may see in the next contract? Do you have any thoughts about, do you think that two-tier is going to be eliminated? Anyone can speak. When they're ready.
I heard some rumors online that they are trying to get wages raised across the board, but at a cost to our health care system. They're wanting to reduce that in order to give everybody a raise, which is not acceptable. Right. When they're making all-time profits, there's no reason we should take a reduction in anything.
Can you tell me about the reduction in the health care? Do you know any more about that?
It was that vague. It was just they're wanting to reduce everybody's health benefits.
Right. Renita, have you heard anything, Matt?
I thought it was comparable to what the retirees have at this time.
Right.
Which I understood was not good.
Spinning off like they did with
like
Viva, so they could shed the initial cost. And right now, second tier and first tier are on two different benefits levels in the first place anyway. That's why they need to just completely obliterate both tiers, get everybody on the same page, and move ahead from there. That's my personal opinion.
Do you think that there's going to be any movement in the 2015 agreement? Okay, so just to give everybody a little bit of backdrop, 2 years ago, I went to and I like to tell the story because it's sort of a fun story. So 2 years ago, I went to Los Angeles and I was covering the AFL-CIO convention, National Labor Federation. And I actually saw Bob King in this little hors d'oeuvre party at this hotel, and I got to talk to this man. Bob King at the time was the president of the UAW, and I asked Bob, I said, you don't have to tip your hand, but in the 2015 agreement, are we going to be able to do away completely with the two-tier wage system? And he goes, frankly, no. And so people have been able to speculate, so we might be able to bridge the gap. There might be some movement on raising the wages of the second-tier workers or bringing everybody closer together. But as far as full parity, that was his opinion back then. Now, granted, Bob King is no longer the president of the union. And our current UAW president is talking about bridging the gap. But I'm not hearing so much more about just completely eliminating two-tier. What do you guys think?
That sucks a lot. I mean, we deserve it, and I know they were. There's no reason we shouldn't make what the person right next to us makes when we're both in 125 degree heat and we're both doing roughly the same work. I don't understand why it's okay to just move us closer together. There shouldn't be a second tier. We only gave that to them because the auto industry was in such a horrible condition at the time, and with the promise that we're going to get it back whenever things got better. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Things are better. Now it's your turn to pay up on the agreement, not pay up a little bit, and then wait 4 more years and pay up a little bit and string us along as long as you can. Mm-hmm. I understand that's the best for business, but I'm sorry, it's not the best for us.
Yeah, I think when they gave the concessions, their word of the day was return to profitability, which they did. And when they returned to profitability, I believe it was about 2.5-3 years ago, the first thing they did was go in and give salary their raises. So they gave salary raises and said, we'll take care of you. And there was a grievance filed through International that got squashed because they didn't have it in writing and whatnot. But now is the time to go in and address those issues of, okay, we took all these concessions, divided the workforce into separate sects, mm-hmm. and now that you've come back, they were $30 billion in the hole, now they're $30 billion ahead, plus had the highest profit quarter the second quarter of this year, mm-hmm. in 15 years or something like that.
Right.
Okay, now it's time to return to profitability, pay it forward, get everybody on a level pay skilled. That way you have a happy level workforce building quality vehicles coming off the line so that Ford will stay in business and we will have jobs and everybody's happy.
Sure. And In addition to the two tiers, that's not the only thing that we gave up. Like I said, there's the 2007 agreement, the 2009 reopener, and then there's the 2011 agreement where we made these cuts sort of permanent. We did everything from reducing the amount of breaks that we had. What else? There were some health benefits that were given away.
The health benefits, since I started in the late 90s, have went from zero everything. You can walk in any doctor, an ER, zero, to every year, it seems like now, it increases by $5 on copay or prescriptions. And now I just got a letter in the mail saying that my prescriptions are changing and they're going to double in price. And these health benefits that they're talking about spinning off, I can't see that getting any better. Mm-hmm. So as far as that and them needing to give something in order to give us what we need, I think it's time for us to take it from them. It's time to make a stand. Because right now is the best time. Because who knows where we're going to be in 4 years.
And where are we going to be in 4 years? So I don't know if anyone is paying attention or listening to that. It might sound like some weird Twilight Zone moment where you were automatically transported back into a time that was not the current time. So what we did was, that was a 2015 archived show that we did called No More Tears, about the negotiation of the 2015 agreement. And we had Matt Callahan in the studio, Matt Slayton, and also Renita Masoner at that time. But joining us now in the present day is Matt Callahan. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you. How you doing?
Great. I'm doing well. And before I get too deep into this, I want to also introduce Eric Truss from Local 600. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's see. Eric, before I get... I'm going to talk to Matt, and I'm going to also talk to you. We're all sort of connected here. We can kind of rap about this in real time. But I want to dedicate this show to a dear friend of ours that we lost last year from the Ford Motor Company, UAW Local 249 member, Derek Poindexter. So, Derek, wherever you are, we dedicate this show to you. Not that Derek was all that, you know, really involved or really, I don't know, active. But Derek really liked to have a good time, and Derek really sort of appreciated leisure time, I think better than anybody else in the entire world. So this show we're going to dedicate to his memory. So real quick, Matt, you said that in the sort of the closing arguments of that thing from 2015 that you think that now is the time so we don't have to face this again in 2019. Is that what we did? Did we strike the company?
No, we didn't do that. It got better, partially. However, they didn't handle the issues they should have at the time. And they always say next contact, next contract. Well, I've heard that several contracts repeatedly. And they're even in a better position now to where... As again, 4 years ago, they could have addressed the issues and got rid of the tiers. They made it better. However, there's still two tiers.
Sure.
And they the T-shirts and everything. Oh, we got rid of it. No, you didn't. They're still there. And they elongated from back in before the 90s when you hired in. Once you got your 90 days in, you went straight to full pay. And then when I hired in on the following contract in 96, it took 3 years to get to full pay. All they did was make it, now it takes 8 years to get to almost full pay. You make about 90% of what it is. I don't know exact calculations, but so yeah, no, they didn't address everything that they could have.
So that's, so by 2023, I think that that was what they were looking at in terms of bringing what they call the in progression members up to full pay. Is that right?
Right. And none of the new hires, which back then would have been 2015, whatever.
Yeah.
Would have had a chance to get to that full pay by the time the 8 years had conspired, you know, because the next contract was 4 years away. So
sure.
Maybe they're planning on fixing it this contract. But, yeah, well, it remains to be seen.
Eric, can you – I don't know if you got a chance to hear that first segment. Did you? I didn't know if it came through on the phone.
Yes, I did.
Okay, fantastic. So what do you think about this?
It is a dire situation, but you got to remember when it came to two-tier, like as he was saying about the eight-year progress, what they also have done, they brought in temps who are on 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
They put them on 4 days, which give them, you know, 40 hours. And then they turn around every September or after most of the vacation's over, and they put them back on 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Well, it just so happened that they do this at Local 600 and a lot of them in the Michigan area, And it so happened that we're coming up on, you know, into September, and it's a question that the temps are worried about. Are we going to go back on 3 days, and what is the contract going to offer?
Okay.
Now, the rumors in the media here in Michigan is that they want more temps.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if someone's just listening to this, they're driving along in their car wondering how it was made. They're listening to all of us, and we are those people who make your cars, by the way. but you know, for people who just are not really familiar with the UAW contracts, what's so problematic about having temporary workers? Because, you know, maybe you could make the argument. I'm not going to. By the way, I should also say that I'm also a UAW member of Local 249 here in Kansas City at the Ford Kansas City Assembly Plant. And we also asked UAW international representatives to join us on the show and local officials of the UAW, and we weren't able to get that at this time. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So, what did you think about that?
Well, the thing is, why is it so different between temps and your full-time people or your, what we call now legacy? Those are people who will get a pension. I'm one of those who will receive a pension. I'm not in progression.
Uh-huh.
In progression basically takes 8 years, but they also won't receive a pension. Well, one thing they did in this contract that was worse than the last contract is the last contract had limit temps to a 20% throughout the whole Ford system.
Okay.
And this last contract that passed, they were given unlimited amount of temps, and Ford is trying to take most likely trying to take advantage of that in this upcoming contract.
Okay, so if everyone can pardon me for a second, I lost completely track of where the heck I was even going with that question, and now I remember what it was. And so I guess I was asking, like, you know, there's probably a lot of companies who use temporary workers, and it doesn't seem all that controversial. Why is it such an issue over there in Local 600? Why is it an issue sort of nationally? I think that you kind of alluded to it, but if you can kind of flesh that out a little bit, Eric.
Sure. So a worker like myself who has a lot of health benefits, and this is where that pays a big part. Like, for instance, I was in a car accident that left me out of work for a year and a half. It took me a year and a half to recover.
Mm-hmm.
I had a job to come back to. They held my job. They held my position. Whereas as a temp, if he gets a personal injury, basically you can't be out a year and a half. If you're probably out a week from your injury, they may just let you go. So there's nothing that guarantee you your job.
Matt, have you had any sort of... Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, then the same thing. If you get injured or something like that in your temp, then, yeah, they'll just let you go, and you don't have anything to fall back on. You don't have health insurance to go get it taken care of. And, like, seasonally, like, I don't know, like Christmas time, retail will hire on extra help and whatnot, whereas the big three, Ford and them, will hire in temps to fight jobs because they can't argue. They have to do whatever they're told to do, no matter how hard or ridiculous it may be. They don't have a choice. So they're like, you want to work here, you have to do this, and they'll add work to a certain job, like you have to shoot more bolts or put more wires on, something like that. Whereas, you know, if you've got your time in, you can fight it and say, no, this is ridiculous, let me get my union to come in here and help me out. The
sure.
temp just has to put their head down and buckle up and do it.
That, yeah. So we've got about another minute or so before we go to our, about 2 minutes. Eric, can you speak to that? Have you had any experience with that where you're working?
Yes, I collaborate on that. Temps only have, they can only be absent 2 days. After 2 days, you're automatically fired. You can only be late for work 2 times and you're fired. So it doesn't, you know, a person like me who's been there 23 years, there's, I think the AWOL policy is after 9 you're fired, and, you know, it takes like 4 late before you even get a written warning. So it's just, there's no equal opportunity for a temp.
Well, do you think that some more traditional employees might even within the UAW or people that are listening, but maybe even inside of the UAW, people that are inside of the factory, they might look at a temporary worker and say, well, you know what? There's a bit of a whipping post here. You have to put in your time. You have to toe the line. You have to come to work every day. You can't be late. I mean, this is a good Ford job, and if you just wait a little while, you're going to have the full benefits that we have. Is there an argument for that, or what do you think, Eric? We got 1 minute.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is argument with that. I got temps in my plant that's been there 4 and 5 years, so you're asking somebody for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that's, I agree with that. I've seen that same thing down here, too.
I've seen a guy whose family member was at a funeral, and he couldn't leave work or they would have fired him. It's finally after we got the union involved that they was able to let him leave so he can go to his funeral of his own sibling.
Oh, wow. Wow. Matt, did you have anything to add to that before we switch over for this little halfway part?
No, I agree that they shouldn't be allowed to have people as temps for 4 and 5 years. It's ridiculous because it went from 90 days to 120 days to now they can bring them back after 89 and blah, blah, blah. So there's got to be an end to it and a limit.
There doesn't seem to be anything temporary or part-time about it. It sounds like a full-time job they just sort of reclassified. And so we're going to go to the break now. Thanks, guys.
On the next Sprouts, part one of a die-in and civil disobedience at the Kansas City weapons plant.
Willie Dexter Watkins, who worked at the Kansas City plant, was diagnosed with heart failure at age 32. Age 32.
And remember, these people took a physical before they came here, so he wasn't suffering from any heart problems before he came here.
Thursday at noon. On August 6, 1945, an American bomber dropped the world's first deployed atomic bomb on Hiroshima, killing over 100,000 people. Lawrence Coalition for Peace and Justice will sponsor a public demonstration on August 6, 2019, at 9th and Massachusetts, Lawrence, Kansas, at 5 p.m. Signs are available. This is a public service announcement of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. Property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
And that very long extended version, not the extended version, but the we just played the whole song. That was Billy Bragg, World Turned Upside Down. And I forgot to mention at the beginning of the program, that was Rage Against the Machine performing. Who is that guy? What's his name? Oh, Bob Dylan, doing Bob Dylan's Maggie's Farm, which I love. I think I've done that quite a few times on here. So, Eric, are you still with us?
Yes.
Fantastic. If you're just now tuning in, this is you're listening to 91.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And this is the Heartland Labor Forum. And joining us in the studio is Matt Callahan, and I'm Tino Scalisi, and we've got Eric Truss on the phone. Does anyone remember where we kind of left off? What were we? Does anyone?
Just addressing that the temps have been there for multiple years, and it's gotten out of hand, whereas, like Eric mentioned, that the last contract opened it to where it's unlimited amount instead of 20% as it was a previous contract.
Sure.
Like when I hired in back in the 90s, I temped for 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
It was you got hired on for full-time for 89 days, and then before your 90th day, you got laid off. Then you went Monday, Friday.
Sure.
Of course, deer season, you work full-time because that's when everybody takes off. So, and,
right.
But, yeah, so I did, you know, my little bit of temp time, but these 4 and 5 year guys, that's just above and beyond. So that's something they need to address and fix.
So, Eric, have you heard anything about the UAW in the 2019 bargaining agenda addressing those issues with the Big Three? Do you know who they're going to start with? Have you heard anything about this?
No, nothing about who they're going to start with. I do know that they, in looking, the first thing they did is they went to all three of them. Looking, I guess basically with the internationalists went to all three of them, starting with Ford. I think then went Chrysler and then GM. But that was just, I think that's basically where they just see what the cards are on the table. It's not the actual negotiation. But that probably is going on now, but that's not necessarily the order that they'll perform that negotiation. That still has to be determined.
And so do you think that is something that the UAW is going to? So I heard Gary Jones, when he was making the opening remarks to the Big Three, that it's not going to take as long for in-progression employees to get to full scale. And I didn't hear much about the temporary workers, but do you think that there's going to be some movement on that and bringing us all under the same thing, that we're going to have all the same wage and that the wages are going to increase and that temps are going to be brought in? What are your predictions, Eric? What have you heard? Anything?
I haven't heard much, but I think for someone like myself who's been 22 years and going to be a pension recipient, if that doesn't change in the next contract, I think someone like myself will not get a raise, which I don't expect there will be one in this negotiation. I think the end progression will probably continue. If they're on the 8-year progression, they'll probably just shorten that just to satisfy them. But as for temps, the rumor is, and then what's going around is that Ford wants more temps, that they're not going to reduce that number. And then this current contract, they have a open door for unlimited amount. So that's something that we should have never opened up in the last contract.
Well, what was the benefit? I mean, if the UAW were to look to its members and say, look, the benefit of doing this, and the reason why we did it in the first place, is that it made the companies more competitive. It's what allowed them to invest more money. There's a lot of money that's been invested here in Kansas City and all around the nation. And that's, you know, freeing up that capital is what has allowed the companies to stay competitive and to reinvest and then in turn allowed us to hire more workers. Is that not
okay? It did hire more workers, but these temps are, you know, they're working for 3 days a week, and then during the summer months they're brought on for 40 hours for about 3 or 4 months, and usually right around September, you know, they're back down to 3 days, and that cycle's been going on and on for 4 years, 3 or 4 years. That's why we have 4 or 5 year temps in our particular plant or in our local.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a repeat cycle that hasn't fixed itself.
Sure.
Now, as far as the companies and even Big Three saying it's a benefit, and it is, and we did suffer through it, but now they're moving jobs to Mexico, as we understand from one of the axle plants out here that I think it's GM. So how did that not
sure.
help the problem? And now you're going to move jobs to Mexico.
Sure. In fact, our local union paper, there was an article about the situation in Lordstown. You know, it could happen to you. And so I'm I'm worried. I'm worried that anybody who's going to be talking about wage increases, or anybody talking about increasing parity with the second tier workers or with temporary workers and traditional employees, retirees, and all of that, that we're going to be told, well, you know, you got to be careful what you ask for, because look what happened to Lordstown. Are you getting any of that in your location, Eric?
Yeah, we get those kind of scares too, you know, be careful what you ask for. But as far as temps are concerned, and I think this is throughout all Local 600, a lot of temps are just saying that if Ford doesn't do nothing for them and they keep them as a temp, they're just going to just walk off. They're going to just come in at work one day and just decide to walk off. They're not going to stand for it anymore. I mean, some of them are working second jobs just to hold their head above water.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, this is all they got.
Is there anything in your local where they're trying to organize with temporary workers and help create solidarity between temporary workers, traditional employees, legacy workers, and in progression? Is there any? Do you know of anything like that going on?
Sure. Yeah. So one thing I'm doing is I've got this shirt I'm coming out with. It's called Temps Lives Matter.
Nice.
And
nice.
And it has a bunch of people in a silhouette of people, and it has like family in a silhouette, and it has them holding a banner, and the banner that they hold says permanent full time with seniority and benefits. And so this I have been kind of previewing it, and everybody's interested in it. So that's, and it's a red shirt, so uh-huh. That's one thing that everybody's gonna kind of get interested in.
Solidarity
I hope to have
Wednesdays,
that done
yeah.
this weekend to get that out, and I'm gonna put out a letter for, you know, even traditional workers like myself to help support the temps.
We're a fan of red in the UAW, and red t-shirts are No More Tears t-shirts back in the day were also that. And so I don't want to, it feels like I'm losing journalistic integrity when I say I really cheer you on and your efforts to get these, raise awareness for these things, but I think that it's important. Have you got a good response either?
Yep.
From traditional workers and even temps?
I got a good response from both. A very high response from temps. They're probably want me to get this project done and going faster than I can get it moving at the present time.
I'm sure. So let's see. Let's talk about, if we can, let's move on from temporary workers and that sort of situation. There's other things that are sort of going on, you know, some of the other key issues that were laid out by Bloomberg was plant protection. They said that this is one of the biggest issues, that we've had GM's plant that's closed. There's all different parties that are worried about it. The president of the United States, the Congress, Democratic candidates, the union's GM head wants to, quote, secure work for its members at the closed plants. Do you think that that's going to be, like, talked about more than anything else? Like, that issue, more than any other issue, is the thing that's going to sort of drive negotiations. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing with GM and Lordstown, and that's going to be one of the first things on everybody's mind is, hey, are they going to ship my job south or overseas like they did?
Sure.
And the amount of production factories that were in Mexico 20 years ago as compared to what is now has just dramatically increased. And I don't really see anything stopping that.
Uh-huh.
Other than the fact that they can keep going and say, well, you know, you're going to buy a car no matter where it's built. But same time, back when Walter Reuther was talking to Henry Ford, and Ford had a robot, and he said, here's the future. And then Walter said, well, how are you going to sell that robot a car?
Mm-hmm.
So if you ship all the jobs overseas, down south, whatnot, okay, how am I going to go buy a car, or why would I want to buy your car?
Right, right.
Like, go ahead, ship it, and then I'll go buy somebody else's, but I will not, yeah. If you keep shipping jobs south like GM, I don't see why anybody would buy a GM.
And I think that there's a regional argument for that, too, because, Matt, you're from Kansas City, aren't you?
No, I was born and raised in St. Louis. They shut my plant down back in 1995.
Oh, so
Yeah. And so, yeah, the same thing happened. They said that they couldn't expand, but, yeah, it was just they shipped the jobs to Chicago and Louisville. And then they shut us down, and then a lot of people came straight to Kansas City. I came via Flat Rock, which I spent 4 years up there building the Mustang in Mazda 6, which was a good experience, and glad to be back in Missouri, though, and hopefully not moving again. But yeah, no, I've been through it, and it tears families apart. It tears whole areas, just decimates them. And I don't want to see that happen to anybody. So, I mean, they can say what they want as far as, you know, temps or you can't get raises or this or that. They're making money hand over fist, so that's just a sad excuse. It's just them being greedy and not willing to spread the wealth, I guess you could say.
Sure. And I know that, you know, protecting what you have, whether it's in your own region or in your own country or whatever, there's something about wanting to protect, you know, not just in your own naked self-interest, but... Gosh, I remember there was a time in Kansas City just a few years ago where there were a lot of people that were, you know, just sweating, like, what in the hell are we going to do? You know, we could end up in Detroit, we could end up in Kentucky, we could end up in Chicago. We don't know what's going to happen. And it's a big motivator when you're coming up against a contract and you're saying, you know, we should strike for to do away with two tiers, but then you're threatened with a plant closure. Is this seem like it's going to be a big issue with you in your local, Eric?
No, it doesn't. Actually, my plant was threatened with a closure, and they turned around and invested so many millions of dollars in it, and we become a big producer for the F-150, and actually we have what's in our plant called a hydroform process. Mm-hmm. And we've had media come from all over the world and different countries to see how that process is done. So that did revitalize our plant. But as far as Local 600, no, that's not an issue.
So you guys have probably heard in the news. I know that there's been a lot of controversies surrounding the UAW and some of its practices, and I'm not going to talk too much about that now, but what I do want to talk about is there was an organizing loss for the second time at the Chattanooga plant for Volkswagen. And I think that, you know, when you lose union density, when you lose the ability to organize in your own industry, it really sort of threatens the safety and security and the wages and benefits of working people who already have a union contract. Eric, do you have any idea, just sort of in your own analysis, looking at that thing, if you've sort of got any awareness of this, of why that happened in the first place, and, you know, what can we do? What's going to be the effect of this going into the negotiations?
Elaborate with effect of what part?
I guess just the effect of that loss, the effect of losing, you know, this is...
The failure to negotiate, or the failure to establish a union with the Volkswagen down in...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes. That is a big failure. Mainly because, and I'm sure there's multiple factors for that, but in the public eye, it makes it seem like when you got those who are union busting, it makes it seem like the point that they're making, even though they don't know the facts, it makes their point look valid, even though they don't know the true facts of why it didn't go through. Like, they don't understand that management puts out their own campaign to scare tactics to make people not unionize like that.
Right. And I, you know, there's more information. I've read some pretty good articles that have come out of Labor Notes, and Chris Brooks was a reporter from Labor Notes that was actually in Chattanooga, and he did some pretty good investigative journalism into what's going on there, what happened in the community, what happened with the union, what happened with the company. And we've got about another 2 minutes, guys. Do you have any predictions? Do you think that 2019 is going to be the year that there's going to be national strike, surgical strikes in different locations, maybe in some in GM or maybe Ford Motor Company, maybe at just different locales, or what? Matt, you got 30 seconds, and then we'll give you the same, Eric. Go ahead, Matt.
With GM closing Lordstown, I know that those guys have got to be worried about everything. So that was a scare tactic coming on contracts. I could see that for sure. So as far as predictions, I believe the progression will probably shorten. They'll bring the two tiers actually into one pay scale.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we don't lose any health benefits. So I don't see any big strikes or anything like that happen. It's always a threat, however.
Sure.
We'll see what happens.
What do you say, Eric? We got 1 minute.
Well, that was already tested out here. There was a supplier plant that had temps, and they didn't want to give them. They wanted to give them a front bonus, but they didn't want to give them a raise for 2 years, and they striked. And that strike lasted for nine hours, and then they renegotiated, and they got what they wanted.
Wow!
I think Now with negotiations, that was a test, and I think a lot of temps here in the Motor City seen that, and they just don't. They feel like whatever they got, that they should be able to do the same too. So,
mm-hmm.
I think we need to stand by our temps. If it comes to a strike, I'll do it.
All right, Eric. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. And thank you, Matt, for coming in and joining us in the studio here.
Anytime.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Working at this job is dirty and dangerous, and I'm taking risks anyway. Oh, if I had the time and the proper equipment, I could do my job safely each day. Everybody here says they're sticklers for safety, and I'm not here to say that they lie. I'm saying we just come to work here. We don't come to die.
Hello, this is Mary Ariel for Safety First. First, why does Trump want the son of late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia to join his cabinet? From Salon.com for July 19th. President Donald Trump has tapped lawyer Eugene Scalia to be his new labor secretary. Trump announced the news of his planned nomination on July 18th, less than a week after Labor Secretary Alexandra Acosta resigned. If confirmed, he will be returning to the department where he served from 2002 to 2003 as solicitor in President George W. Bush's administration. Bush nominated Scalia only a month after he helped overturn the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, compliance program on workplace safety. Scalia argued at the time that ergonomics rules intended to prevent repetitive motion injuries were based on thoroughly unreliable science. In 2012, the Wall Street Journal described him as one of industry's go-to guys for challenging financial regulations, while Bloomberg Businessweek published an article entitled, "Suing the Government? Call Scalia." Scalia has also defended Boeing in a challenge by the National Labor Relations Board over the aerospace company's decision to transfer work to a non-union facility, and SeaWorld in a losing case against OSHA following the death of a trainer, Dawn Branchow, by killer whale Tillicum. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, then a federal judge, sided with SeaWorld. Next, UPS workers push for air-conditioned trucks, more regulations on heat exposure, from OHSonline.com for July 22nd. Growing pressure to deliver packages at a rapid rate is taking its toll on people tasked with bringing your Amazon order to your door, delivery drivers. In a new investigation published on July 18th, NBC News explores the difficult situation faced by UPS drivers, the vast majority of whom are delivering packages in record hot temperatures without air conditioning in their trucks or loading facilities. Those conditions put workers at high risk of heat-related illnesses, a fact not lost on workers pushing for more oversight from OSHA. Some UPS workers report to NBC that cargo areas of their trucks can reach 140 degrees, as high as 152 degrees. Since 2015, at least 107 UPS workers in 23 states have been hospitalized for heat-related illness. The only employer with more incidences reported to OSHA is the U.S. Postal Service, which does not air condition most of its trucks and has hundreds of thousands more employees than UPS. Despite complaints from its workforce that conditions are getting worse, with boom of online shopping and hotter summers, UPS said it had no plans to air-condition delivery trucks. Drivers told NBC they don't feel comfortable complaining about issues at the company because it offers one of the highest-paying jobs in the country for people without college degrees. OSHA has limited oversight powers when it comes to heat exposure, as Congress and OSHA have never created standards and regulations for companies. The agency has, however, ever invoked the General Duty Clause, one that guarantees employees a workplace free from hazards that could cause death or serious injury, against UPS for heat risks at least 8 times since 2011. The Teamsters, which represent UPS workers, is supporting legislation introduced by Representative Judy Chu, Democrat California, that would require employers to give workers paid breaks in cool spaces, access to water and training, and how to respond to heat illness. Finally, OSHA discovers multiple hazards at Fuyao Glass America from EHSToday.com for July 30th. An inspection initiated under OSHA's site-specific targeting program for workplaces with high rates of injuries has led to $724,000 in fines for Chinese-owned Fuyao Glass America, Inc. at its Moraine, Ohio production plant. OSHA found 9 repeat and 13 serious violations at Fuyao, including one for electrical safety, failing to evaluate permit-required confined spaces, failure to train workers on lockout-tagout, and entering confined spaces, failure to install machine guarding, lack of hearing protection, fall protection, and other personal protective equipment. The Fuyao plant provides glass for all major automakers. The plant has been cited 12 times in the past 4 years for similar violations. Fuyao has 15 business days from receipt of citations and penalties to comply, request an informal conference, or contest the findings. This is Mary Ariel for Safety First.
And this is Judy Ansel with the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. On Thursday, August 8th, there's a free screening of Strangers in Town, a film about Garden City's transformation by immigrants. It'll be at Johnson County Community College, 12345 College Boulevard in Overland Park, 8:30 p.m. So, 7 to 8:30 p.m. State legislative hearing on property tax hikes in Missouri counties, and focusing on Jackson County, I presume, Tuesday, August 12th, 9 a.m. at the MCC Metropolitan Community College's Business Center, 1775 North Universal. That's near Front Street in Kansas City, Missouri. Rally to support SEIU healthcare organizing at Truman Hospital, August 13th, noon, although I think it may start a little earlier, like 11:30, on Holmes at Children's Mercy Hospital. Wyandotte County Third Saturday Democratic Breakfast will be Saturday, August 17th, 8:15 for breakfast, 9 a.m. for speaker. At Las Islas Marias, 7516 State Avenue in Kansas City, Kansas, and the speaker will be Nancy Boyda, who is a former congressperson running for Senate and also the new head of the Kansas Democratic Party. And IWW Organizer Training 101, Basic Organizer Training, will be August 24th. It's a weekend, August 24th, starting at 8:30 a.m. to August 25th at 4 p.m. It's going to be at SEIU Local 14523 Paseo, I think that's right, in Kansas City, Missouri. And you can register for this at the Kansas City IWW Facebook page. That's it for our calendar. You can find a copy of the calendar at heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can also find our archived shows as well as our upcoming schedule. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show is going to be called Who Are You Going to Call When Your Job Disappears? And Kansas school bus drivers starving in the summer. It's about the fact that you can't get unemployment if you're a Kansas school bus driver, even though you're laid off in the summertime. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman.
Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum,
a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI. Struggle and fight for the common man's rights to be